Now, we have on the line Bob Carter, and he is the director and owner of a company called Nature Travels. He's based in the UK. And what completely blows my mind is the idea of going dog sledging to the Northern Lights. Welcome to you, Bob.
Good morning. Hello.
Good morning. Well, this can we start with, first of all, what your company does? Because you've got a particular, I mean, you're hot on ecotourism, and I want to just know what that means to you, just to start off with that.
Sure, yeah. So our company, Nature Travels, we specialise in outdoor experiences in the Nordic countries. So We started originally just with Sweden, and now we've added some with Norway and Finland over the last few years as well. So we're a little bit different, I guess, from some of our other colleagues in the industry in that we focus exclusively on the activities. Mm. So we don't do sort of, you know, hotels and car hire and that kind of thing. So we focus particularly on the outdoor activities and particularly on ecotourism activities. So we work with a wide range of small scale, sometimes very small scale indeed, local providers in the countries. And so part of what ecotourism means to us is about supporting rural enterprise in many ways. I mean, I think one of the really nice things about what we've been able to achieve is, supporting many companies in quite remote areas that perhaps wouldn't have that level of business or, you know, customers coming to them, especially from outside their home countries.
Mm. What I like about it is just reading is that you leave virtually no footprint in terms of taking people up there, and some of the parties are as little as four people with a guide, obviously. But it does sound like that a real parking off of a person, if you like, from everyday life, and to go and experience those sort of countries, which and sort of going through on sledges through forests and what have you, does sound very romantic. Is it as romantic sounding, or do you just get jolly cold?
It certainly can be romantic. I mean, obviously, it is an active experience. I mean, as you say, the groups are very small, normally from four to maximum six.
Yes.
And certainly the intention is to make the activities as low impact as possible. So we do focus on kind of non-motorized activities like dog sledding, for example. Yeah. And I mean, certainly it can be romantic. I think it's also important to be prepared for the fact that it can be also very active. But we offer a wide range of dog sled tours, you know, so things which are suitable for families, you know, even with perhaps children as young as six or seven.
Oh, really?
You know, right up to kind of, right up to kind of challenging wilderness expeditions, you know, with winter camping in the mountains and that kind of thing. So quite a broad range. But within that, all of them are active. And, you know, the weather conditions and that kind of thing that you encounter can make a huge difference as well to how challenging. But we do have a very wide range of persons, and on our Northern Lights dog sledding tour, the 8-day tour, currently our oldest participant is 72. So age is certainly no barrier, but you just need to be prepared to sort of get involved and enjoy the outdoors, I think, is the most important thing.
Well, I'm just looking at one of the comments on your website from somebody who had experienced a trip through in Sweden, which and Lapland, which of course to somebody who lives in Africa, as I do, Lapland has got all sorts of romantic connotations. I still believe in Father Christmas. Well, they say the best part of my trip was when we were coming to the end of day two and were sledding through the forest at speed at night. It was like a roller coaster of otherworldly beauty. Dog sledding was really perfect. Well, I don't know. Do you take people through the night?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, if you the sort of conditions that you encounter very much all depend on when you go. So in the far north, in the sort of deep midwinter, in December and January, the sun doesn't come above the horizon at all.
No.
So so that doesn't mean it's pitch dark, as many people think, because you've got the snow lightening the landscape, you've got the stars, you've got hopefully the northern lights as well. So the activities take place in the same way, just as they would do later in the winter season when there's more daylight. Well, I mean, you can certainly sit in the dark, absolutely.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it? Because those huskies and the fact that they just are so at home in that sort of terrain, and they seem to love doing what they do, don't they?
They do, yes, they do. And the whole sort of welfare side of things and that kind of thing is very important to us as well. I mean, I think they are born to run, they're born to pull. Mm. And there are, you know, different dogs that are suited for different kinds of tours. So some of them will like more the kind of the harder mountain tours. Some of them will be, especially perhaps as they get a little older, you know, be more suited for the shorter tours and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they all love what they're doing, absolutely. Yeah,
now
it's very much a kind of Husky's raison d'etre to pull and run. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they certainly look very happy at doing it, I must say. In terms of, shall we start off with Sweden? Because I think that was one of your first tours, am I right? Places that you did.
Yes, I mean, still the majority of what we offer is in Sweden.
Okay.
And the majority of our dog sled tours are in Sweden. We do offer a little bit of dog sledding in Finland, which is probably the romantic one if you're looking for some romantic dog sledding, and a little bit in Norway as well. But Sweden is the main destination for us for winter. Yeah.
What I like, what you reiterate throughout everything, is the fact that there is no light pollution where you are, so the chances of enjoying the night sky and actually seeing those northern lights are obviously enhanced. Yes,
that's true. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the further away you are from light pollution, obviously, you know, if you're in a city, just in the same way as seeing the stars, you know, it's more difficult to see the night sky.
Now, you've got various different trips that you offer, and they vary in length. If we say took, I think there's a 3-day and a 5-day and an 8-day, am I right? Or do they vary between the countries? Just explain to us, if we arrive, I'm just guessing that from here, from South Africa, we'd come to London and then hop across to Sweden or Norway or wherever we're destined to travel. What happens after that? Are we picked up from the airport? How does it work?
Yes, I mean, obviously the travel logistics vary slightly depending on which tour you're choosing and where you're traveling to, because they're all different locations. But you'd always be picked up from, as far as possible, we try to encourage people to travel within the country by public transport. So, for example, many guests doing our tours in northern Sweden, they'll take the night train up from Stockholm. It is also possible to fly, so it's perfectly, you know, just a question of preference.
Yes.
But many people obviously come in connection for the tours only, especially the longer tours. Many guests, for example, doing perhaps one of the shorter tours, they may be combining it with many other things. They may be spending a night or two in Stockholm en route. They may be doing other activities in the area, either with us or independently, you know, before or after their tour. So everybody's different in the way that they organize things.
And in terms of Norway, I suppose you could combine it with a trip down the fjords, but then how does that work with the time of year?
You could. I mean, they do have the packet boat, the Hurtigruten boat, that runs the coast of Norway throughout the year. That's not something that we offer particularly.
No.
Because, as I say, more on the outdoorsy side of things. But that is one way to access northern Norway.
Yeah. You could combine it.
That we have are in the far north of Norway, so in the Finnmark Plateau rather than in the fjord area.
Mm.
But you could, in theory, access them by coming up from boat or way up through the fjords. Yeah.
Let's. I'll tell you what we're going to do now. We're going to go to a short piece of music and some adverts and traffic. And when I come back, I just wanted to talk with you about the logistics. How does it work as an individual, as me, say? How does it work with the sledges? Are we trained to actually guide the dogs, or I just want to know how it works before I come. So stay
Absolutely,
on the line.
Which,
okay,
yeah.
Thank you. Stay on the line.
I'll take you through it. No
okay, thanks. Well, we're back now with Bob Carter, who's the director and owner of Nature Travels. And we're looking at dog sledding to the Northern Lights, and that takes us to Norway, Sweden, and or Finland. Are you still there, Bob?
Yes, I am, absolutely.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, just tell us about it. We've arrived. We're now wherever we're going to be travelling. And we obviously are, well, pretty sure that we're going to be clothed up to the gunnels to keep us warm. Do we buy it there? How do we kit ourselves out for this adventure?
Right. Well, all the outer clothing that you need, so your thermal outer suit, which is like a suit that's also used for snowmobiling, so almost like a padded sort of duvet type suit, which is very warm, very resilient as well. That's provided, as are warm boots, warm hat, warm gloves. And in most cases, you know, you can borrow extra socks and that kind of thing, and perhaps a face mask if you need it.
Yes.
So the idea is that you should bring with you your base and mid layers. So if you've done any skiing before or any kind of outdoor activity when it's been a bit chilly, you know, camping in the autumn or something like that, you'll probably find that you already have much of what you need.
Yeah.
And as I say, all the outer clothing is provided. And
good
temperatures,
news.
You know, can vary very much, although it can be minus 30 equally, you know, especially later on in the spring, winter, in March and April, it can be around zero. So cold is a very relative thing, and it's a very dry cold as well. So I find, you know, here in the UK, sort of plus two, will go right into my bones, and I'll be freezing here in the UK in plus two far more than I would be in minus 20 in Sweden.
So how it's interesting.
Very, very it's kind of cold. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, that is very good news. So in terms of, now, do we have to shout mush a lot? How does it work?
No, you don't need to shout mush. You'll be shown how to harness your team, first of all. So one of the things, obviously, all persons are driving their own sled. You'll have your own team that you help to look after during the tour. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll be harnessing them in the morning. You'll be staking them out at night, and you'll be sort of feeding them and picking up the little things they leave behind and all that kind of thing. So also working with the dogs is very much part of the experience. So you'll be introduced to your team, shown how to harness, shown how to use the brakes. So sleds have two brakes, a hook brake and a foot brake, which you use in different ways. Okay. So they'll obviously sort of go through the kind of various bits. So you don't need to chat mush. What you need to do when you start is simply take your foot off the brake, because the dogs will be ready to pull. And it's much easier to stop them than to get them started. getting them started is no problem at all.
No.
But obviously you're sledding in a line with your guide sled at the front.
Yes.
And your dogs will follow those.
And you give us a little talk, or someone gives us a little talk as to how this all works and how to stop them, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, as I say, there are two brakes which you use in different ways. There's a plate brake that you use just for slowing down a little bit, and a hook brake that you use when you want to sort of anchor things. So there isn't that much to learn. I mean, people generally find that they gain confidence very quickly. You know, many people are quite nervous about driving their own sled, but you'd be surprised how quickly people relax into it.
It sounds really exciting, I have to say. And
it is,
so.
Yeah.
What do you recommend? You've got 3 days as a sort of taster, or do many people go on to 8 days? How does it work? What do you recommend?
Well, it's very much depending on, you know, the kind of activity that you're looking for, how used you are to the outdoors. Certainly, people who are looking for a more accessible trip, or perhaps a little bit uncertain whether it's going to all be for them, the shorter tours. So, for example, what we call Discover Dog Sledding, which is sort of 4 days, 3 nights of arrival, and 2 days sledding and a little bit of sledding on day four, so two and a bit in total, is very, very popular. And that's something, as I say, which is suitable for both adults and families, although we don't mix those within the same group.
No. Okay, yes, that makes sense.
And then the longer tours, the 8-day tours, would be for adults. And again, they can be... It's certainly not necessary to have previous dog sledding experience for most of those. We do offer some tours which are kind of next step trips, but on the whole, it's generally most important to just love being outside, to be up for a bit of a challenge and to enjoy the adventure. Really.
Okay. Bob, I'm going to put you on hold again, but after I come back, we're just going into news headlines for a minute. After I come back, I just want to talk about where we stay. And food, which is quite important in my book. Okay. Stay on the line. Thank you. If you've just tuned in, I'm chatting to Bob Carter, who's the director and owner of Nature Travels, and we're looking at dog sledding to the Northern Lights, either in Norway, Sweden or Finland. Bob, just tell us about where we stay at night and how it works in terms of food and you know, we've got to keep well-fueled, I imagine.
You have, that's very important. Yeah, you'll be burning a lot of calories, because although the dogs do a lot of the work, they certainly won't do all of it, and especially when you're going uphill and that kind of thing, you'll need to be helping them out. And if they don't think you're helping enough, they'll just go on strike and turn around and give you
Is that so? Naughty puppies.
Oh, absolutely, But, no, I mean, food is certainly very important, of course, and it's important to keep people sort of warm and comfortable. So you're staying, it depends a little bit on the tour that you choose. So the majority of our tours are cabin tours. So you'll be sledding from cabin to cabin and staying in what we call wilderness cabins along the way.
Yeah.
So that means simple. So no electricity, no running water, no showers, but you often have sauna in some of them. So that provides a wonderful, but both a nice way to soothe your muscles after a day out on the trail. And also,
do you have to roll in the snow afterwards?
You don't have to, but it's optional. It's good fun. Yeah.
That's the idea, isn't it?
And shrieking is also optional, but,
I imagine everyone does.
They do, Well, not everybody. No. Some people don't quite take the plunge, but it is. It's a good thing to brave if you can, and it's actually not that cold once you've heated up nicely in the sauna either.
Yes. Okay.
So you're staying in cabins which don't have any electricity, so they're heated by wood burning stoves normally. Mm-hmm. Sometimes sometimes gas heaters, but normally we're burning stoves, and you're cooking on normally gas stoves, camping stoves.
Okay.
And the sort of food that you have, obviously it does need to be, you know, it's not a gourmet experience in that way. It needs to be sort of suitable for preparation in quite a simple environment.
Mm.
But food's certainly very important. So we certainly make sure that, you know, everybody's well fed. One of our tours in Vindelfjellen in the west of Lapland, actually, most of the food there is prepared by the musher's wife. So that's really nice, home cooked farmhouse food.
Yeah.
But then the accommodation, you'll be going out to the lake normally. They normally cut a hole in the ice to draw your water from.
Mm.
So all that kind of thing is sort of very much part of the experience, you know, and getting involved in everything that happens around the cabin.
Wonderful. Now, I was just reading here the head guide at the kennels for the tour. This is in Sweden. Was a champion and one-time European champion for sled racing. So you're in good hands, really.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. That's Petter over in the west of Lapland. Yes, he runs that course over there.
Yeah.
Yes. He's one of Sweden's most experienced mushers. He will talk to you for hours until your eyes glaze over. As dog breeding, feeding, and training, and care.
Okay. Well, in terms of how many people he takes, I was just looking, the group size there is very small, just four persons plus the guide.
Yes.
So it really is a very personal experience, isn't it?
It is extremely, yeah. I mean, that part of Lapland really has almost nothing going on. Vindelfjellen is a fantastic area. It's Europe's largest protected reserve.
Yeah.
And there's really very, very little out there. And it's a superb place for sledding. So, yeah, very, very, very personal.
Mm.
So that means people often come. Obviously, you know, if you're a group of three or four persons, you can have a private tour as well.
Mm.
Although many people, you know, do come as solo travellers or just with one or two companions and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, I know that there was talk when you take the longer tour that you go and meet various people who live up there. And I don't know about them at all. I've never heard of them. Can you just explain what that entails?
Yeah, that's right. So so some of the tours up in the far north of Finland, in the Finnmark area, the Sami people are the indigenous people of the northern lands there. So that covers Swedish Lapland. It also covers part of Finnish Lapland and the Kola Peninsula in Russia and into northern Norway. So they're the indigenous folk, and they're still, you know, very much alive and well.
Mm.
Many of them still work with reindeer herding, which is the traditional...
what they do.
The traditional thing that they are involved in. Obviously, many also live, you know, much more modern lives, of course. You know, the culture has moved on a lot.
Of course.
So very much kind of a balance of, but they still maintain a strong focus on the traditional route.
Mm.
And reindeer herding is obviously done in a slightly different way than it was generations ago.
Yeah.
But there is a chance to sort of meet the reindeer herders, talk about life as a reindeer herder and the various things that are involved in taking care of those, absolutely. And that's a really fun part of the whole experience.
That's in Finland, is it?
That's in northern Norway, that one.
Oh, northern Norway, okay.
That's in Finnmark, So Finnmark is the plateau in the very far north of Norway.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm just thinking that, you know, there's an ice hotel somewhere in the Nordic countries, aren't there? I mean, one could combine this whole experience with all sorts of other things in those countries. It would be absolutely fascinating to...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, the ice hotel is located in Jukkasjärvi, which is just outside Kiruna in the north of Swedish Lapland, and that's just 15 minutes or so from where many of our tours in that area take place. So certainly people do... combine either just a visit or perhaps an overnight there as well.
Mm.
I mean, that's a real experience. That's a nice thing to tack on to a trip, absolutely.
Yeah. No, it does sound absolutely fascinating. Well, now what we've got to talk about is costs, because you've got to consider us Rand people over here. we're feeling a little bit poorer than we were a few years ago. Now, can you just tell us the cost? Obviously, we've got to bear the cost of getting there. But in terms of 3 days versus 8 days, say, could you just give us an overall picture of what it would cost? And does it vary much between the three countries that we've spoken about?
Sure. Well, obviously, dog sledding is not the cheapest holiday compared to, you know, the sort of things that we offer in summer, like canoeing and that kind of thing, which are extremely affordable. The economics of running a kennel and looking after dogs and all that kind of thing are quite eye-watering. So it will always be be something, you know, that's a little bit higher price than other kinds of holidays. Yeah. But in terms of the travel, yeah, as you say, that's not something that we offer, but we help people as much as they need to in terms of getting there. Mm. But once they've got there, basically, you know, the price includes everything that you need. So a 4-day, 3-night would be, I couldn't give you the price in rand, I'm afraid.
No, that's okay.
Around 730 British pounds. Yes. And then that goes up to kind of around 1,500 or so for an 8-day tour. So an 8-day tour would be sort of arrival, departure, and 6-day sledding.
Okay.
So
an 8-day tour would be, 8-day tour would be how much?
Around between sort of 15 and 1,700 pounds, depending on the dates that you go and the particular tour that you choose, because obviously we offer, as I say, you know, the ones that are cabins or the ones that are winter camping or the ones that are mountains and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they're all a little bit different. And in terms of costs, Norway's traditionally always been more expensive, although the way the exchange rates have worked in the last few years, that's very much evened out, really. So I'd say in many ways, Norway's more or less comparable to Sweden. But there isn't a huge difference in terms of the countries themselves, although Norway still will be in many ways more expensive simply because of the cost of living there and that kind of thing.
Well, I'm just looking. I'm only sort of putting the rand to the pound at 19 rand. I know it's a bit more than that, but it comes out at about 32,000 rand for a 300 for an 8-day at the top end. So I mean, yeah, and we just have to get there. So, I mean, that's, that's a holiday, really, I would have thought, worth doing. And as you say, you're supplying the clothing and all those sort of things that would be hugely expensive as an add-on.
Yes, yeah. I mean, obviously, all that sort of specialist equipment is provided, all the local transfers and, you know, everything that's involved in the tour. If you need sleeping bags and tents, obviously, all that sort of thing's provided.
Yeah.
But the additional costs are really the travel side.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, many people see a dog-sled tour is very much kind of, you know, trip of a lifetime.
Mm.
And,
yes, exactly.
You know, we're very pleased that many people come back and sort of give us that kind of comment.
Yeah.
So yes, we would certainly recommend making the trip. We've had a number of guests from South Africa, which is really nice. We have guests from all over the world, actually, increasing number from Australia and New Zealand and the States, as well as from Britain.
But, wonderful. It sounds like an amazing experience and a real adventure, Bob. Now, give us your website because I know you do other things, which, you know, including skating and just briefly give us an overview of what the company offers as well, apart from this.
Sure. So our website is Nature Travels, so travels with an S. .co.uk, and if you search for dog sledding holidays in Sweden or something like that, we should be very much near the top.
Yeah.
So yeah, we offer a wide range of things in summer. Dog sledding is certainly our main and our most popular activity in winter.
Mm.
We also do ice skating on natural ice. So again, that's an incredibly unusual experience, very hard to find in other places. We also do ski touring, so cabin to cabin ski touring and that kind of thing. And also some sort of winter cabins, but always with an active focus, always with some kind of activity going on.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, we do a lot of canoeing, a lot of self-guided canoeing. And again, that can be at a wide range of levels, from things that you could take a baby on, you know, right up to kind of challenging wilderness expeditions.
Is this also in the Nordic countries? Is that also?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so we focus exclusively on Sweden, Norway, and Finland, yeah.
Yeah, wonderful.
And, lots of kayaking, lots of hiking, some other little things like bushcrafts and, you know, some sort of unusual accommodation options like staying in tree houses and teepees and whatnot. So quite a wide range of things to choose from whichever time you come.
How wonderful. Bob Carter, director, owner of Nature Travels, many thanks for chatting to us today on Classic Lifestyle.
Thank you very much. We'll save you a space.
Take care. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye. Bye-bye.